because it's sad that we have the sanctification itself in advance. In Parshas Naso, according to Chazal, what happened was something else. According to Chazal, in Parshas Naso, in the end of Parshas Naso, was the next step. The way Chazal seems to understand is, in the end of Adar, we have the inauguration of the Kohanim, and then in the end of what we have in Parshas Naso, was referred to as the Yimei HaMiluyim, so there, which start on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so there what we have is Chanukas HaMizbeach. We have all the repetition of all the Nesiim, whose Karbanos are now being brought by the Kohanim, who have been inaugurated in Parshas Tetzaveh by Moshe Rabbeinu. And here, the Torah refers, in a famous Pasuk, in Perek Zayin Pasuk Pei Dalet in Parshas Naso, Zos Chanukas HaMizbeach. This is the Chanukas HaMizbeach. So what we have first is Kedushas HaMizbeach, and then we have what follows that is Chanukas HaMizbeach. We have after that the Chinuch of the Mizbeach. So our topic, Be'ezer Hashem, for the next few weeks is the topic of Chinuch. And we're going to discuss in a moment the definition, the basic definition from Rashi of what Chinuch means. But what emerges, though, is that before something comes before Chinuch. Before there was Chanukas HaMizbeach, I'd like to be mayor, there was Kedushas HaMizbeach. Now, if I had asked you what comes first, you would have thought that Kedushas HaMizbeach comes after Chanukas HaMizbeach, right? Kedusha is something that's very lofty, something that's very, very beautiful. But it turns out, just in putting the psukim together, what happened in terms of the Mishkan is first there needed to be a Kedusha of the Mizbeach, and then the next step is that there needed to be, the next step was Chanukas HaMizbeach. So what's the pshat? So I think on a basic level in Tanakh, in terms of the words of Kiddush and Chinuch, one can make a particular point. And then maybe just to be meichin ourselves properly to this Avodas HaKodesh, maybe just to add a couple of nekudas. First of all, we all know that the word Kedusha is translated by as holiness is not used entirely that way in Torah. Kedusha is actually used as a expression of separation, to separate, to designate. Pentuk dashamaleya, losia kedesha. So we see the word kedusha, holiness, starts with a separation, to set aside. So it could very well be, Rabosai, that even if we accomplish absolutely nothing in the, I'm giving myself a nechama, in the next few weeks, but pashut, just to be magdish, just to set aside time to think about chinuch. In other words, the first step of being mechanic properly is just to set aside time, just think about it. Even if everything that we come up with together, we have to readdress and rework, but at the same time, just being magdish zman for it is something that's extremely, extremely important. Secondly, Revolvi, who, as we're going to see, Be'ezer Hashem, I think the whole series will really be mefusas. Ever since Revolvi spoke about chinuch, many things have changed in the world of pedagogy and chinuch in the Olam HaTorah today. Revolvi always used to emphasize that the most important part for chinuch is tefillah. And so the tnai to chinuch is that we add a certain amount of kedusha, dahinu avoda, in tefillah, that we set aside really a bakasha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he should give us yata d'shmaya in this endeavor. My wife has told me that she quoted them before, the Abramovs, in regards to Taras HaMishpacha. She said before she starts shir, may could be that this is something common in Beis Yaakov, could be men are too proud to do such a thing, but Mrs. Abramov, before she starts the shir on Taras HaMishpacha, she says a kapitel of Tehillim with the women before they start. We have to daven for siyata d'shmaya. So that's number two, that kedusha is a tznai for chinuch hamizbeach. Dahainu, the second part of kedusha being tefillah. And finally, I think the last part, and with this way we segue into what chinuch actually is, the last thing is that we ourselves have to be mosif a little bit of kedusha. In order for us to be zocha, to be mechanech, a proper home, so then that requires of us to be mosif a little bit of kedusha. We're not talking about something that's a lot. We're talking about something that not a lot, something that's very, very small. But every single one of us, for us to be successful in this difficult and holy endeavor, well, every single one of us should make a cheshbon of being mosif a little bit of kedusha, and that's what Chazal are telling us, what the Torah Kedosh, excuse me, is telling us when it puts Kedushas HaMizbeach before Chanukas HaMizbeach, before we even get to the practical process of Chinuch, it's Pum Farkert. It doesn't come that there is Chinuch and then Kedusha, but after the opposite, that when we make efforts in Kedusha, then we'll be Zocha for real Chinuch. Revolbi, whose work, this work, Zriya Ubinyan B'chinuch, sets down a very, very famous yisod that's been sent over many, many times. We're going to elaborate, maybe say even more things than Revolbi himself says. I apologize that I'm not so proficient in the technological world, so I think you have everything in front of you. I photocopied one page twice. But we're starting with Smicha Ubinyan, right over there. We're going to start with Revolbi's yisod, and then I want to get down to the definition of what chinuch is. Smicha ubinyan. V'tfila amidan umevarchem shtei brachos v'in Yerushalayim. Bonei Yerushalayim umatzmiach keren Yeshua. Ha'achat shayye bonei Yerushalayim, v'ashniya shayye matzmiach et ha-Mashiach. Smicha ubinyan elu shtei pulot shonot. Smicha hi tahalich tivi ba'olam hazeh. Binyan hu davar sh'adam osa. Revolbi emphasizes that there's two parts in almost every expression of progress vis-a-vis man. One is what he's going to call planting, and the other is going to be building. Smicha yitalich tivi. Eit somech me'elach. Binyan hu davar sh'adam osa. Skip a paragraph. Me'ein zeh kotev haramchal b'tchilat mesilat yisharim. Yisod ha-chasidut v'shorish ha-avodah ha-tmima hu shi'idbar v'yizdamet etzel ha-adam ma'chavato ba'olamo. So Revolbi has a beautiful diuk in the Mesilas Yisharim. There are two descriptions of avodas Hashem. Korim arba mil mishonot elu mitoch regilut v'choshu nuz zumim militza. Generally, we run over these first few words in Mesilas Yisharim. Yisod ha-chasod v'shorish ha-avida. Havoda, these are four words that make up the Shem Hashem, and he found something very nice to start with. Says Revolbi, no. Next page. Haramchal, of course, skip here and there. Haramchal kan koveya, shegam bavodat Hashem yesh nei mehalchim. Chasidut tzricha yisod. Chasidut zu amida al yona v'binyan ha'adam. U'binyan tzorech yisod. When it comes to chasidus, that's a reflection of the building of person. And that requires a yisod. Shoresh ha'avoda, legabe avoda, mishtamish bal mesilat yisharim beloshen shoresh. Kavanato lomar bezeh she'avoda hi talich organi, which is the English word of organic, hatzomeach ba'adam. That's something that comes natural to a person. And he continues and he gives other dugma'ot in Chazal for the notion of both binyan and smicha. Of course, the punchline that's important for us is on page Yud Aleph. Al derech zu novin et inyan hatzmicha v'abinyan b'chinuch yilodeinu. Im rotzim sh'hayeled yitzmach liyehudi halomei Torah u'mekayim mitzvot, tzrichim lizroa bo et hazera shel Torah. As is emphasized, the most important part in chinuch is the zriya, is the planting. And he gives an example. Katan hayodei ledaber av melando Torah v'kriyishma teira mahi amar av amnuna teira tzivalanu Moshe. Dvarim elu heim heim advarim shebahem yeshorish diburo. Zui azriya. Hayelet shomea l'rishana b'chayav sheyesh lanu Torah. V'hayelanu navi gadol Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom. There's an organic environment that's being created for the child where implicit is that there's this Navi Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is our Morasha. To put it in other terms, the entire environment of the home, everything that goes on around the child, that's Zriya. not a pointed lesson, not reward or punishment, but everything that surrounds the child. That's Zriya. Al Abinyan Shebechinuch, skipping down towards the bottom on Yud Aleph, on a Motzim Be'avot, Ben Chomesh L'Mikra, Ben Eser L'Mishna, Ben Chomesh Esrei L'Gemara. Binyan is teaching a child. 5, they learn Torah. 10, they learn Mishnah. 15, Gemara. Continuing on to page Yud Beis, Revolvi gives us the punchline. Third paragraph. Im ani bone yeled umakne lo ma'alot, ve'eni mityaches l'koach ha'tzmicha shelo. Even if I build a child properly, they go to the best schools and they get the best instruction. Azai koach ha'tzmicha holech u'mitnaven v'yeled nia robot. If the child is only going to get the chinuch of binyan, they would be fantastic robots. Mistama will say ma'ashamru lo. Avol ein bo chayut. He'll do what he's instructed to do, but there isn't going to be internal growth. He's not going to have that deep sense of commitment and independence from inside of him. I would argue even more. I would argue that the odds are that it's not going to even stay. That if it only is binyan, as good as the binyan is going to be, then ultimately the child, because of the challenges of the environment around him, then there are most of the things that they were inspired by their children are not going to stay with them. In bold, here Volbi says it out, on the other hand, if we don't build them, instruct them, punish them, and reward them, so then in such a case, then they'll grow up wild. Chinuch is the combination of these two things. At the same time, even though we need Zriya Ubinyan, there is a very, very important point before we get into the details of what is Zriya, what is Binyan. We're going to spend a lot of time, much more than what Revolvi spells out in the Sefer. There's another point that he makes a couple pages later. I'm going to skip around. I'd like to build the shiurim in a slightly different order than Revolvi does it. And if you look at page Tezayin, Revolvi makes a point that gets to the core of what chinuch is. Page Tezayin, he says, "Heistaklut l'tevach aroch. Chinuch hu tahalich shetzarach liot l'chatzchila. Chinuch has to be something in which we look at things long term. Kfar kasher yeled ben shnatayim o shalosh shanim tzarach ladat l'kachet b'cheshbon shekisha yeled yeh ben arba asrei chamesh esrei hu yeh b'tkufa kashem ma'od." It's very, very hard when we think about our children now as 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, to think of them as teenagers. For Rabosai, we're going to blink an eye, and in a very short while, they're going to be teenagers. Every single teenager goes through, I'll call it a crisis. There's a real crisis of identity that goes from going from a child to an adult. And how we're mechanech now is going to be critical of how they're going to handle the challenges of adolescence. Kedei la'avor et ha'tkufa shel gil arba asrei b'shalom, hu tzarech liot kashur im horim shelo b'yachas chan. There has to be a sense of warmth with the parent. My wife always says that one of the most important things that we're trying to do in our chinuch is trying to make sure that when they're 14, 15 years old, they're going to feel comfortable that when they feel a challenge, we are going to be the first address. That as their parents, they're going to come to us. And that's what we're doing now, at this age, so that when they're teenagers, they're going to come to us in times of crisis. But if we're tough on them when they're younger, if we hit them, or God forbid, we ask from them more than they're capable of doing, and Rav Osai, that's emotional abuse, So then we break down that natural bond between parent and child. One will not see the breakdown at this early age. There will be no sign of it. Rav Volbi describes that there are parents that came and they cried to him, "Ein eni mevin ma im hayeled sheli, hu lo medaber iti klal, hu lo mesaper li shum davar. Ein lo mesag ma alech etzlo, I don't know what's going on. Kishorim boim v'sholim oti ma lasot," when they ask me what to do, in a way my heart goes out for the parents. Rav Volbi responds to them, "Ani shoel otam, amerli, tell me, did you hit your child when they were 3 or 4 years old?" He said, "Of course, I need to be mechanic them." He said, "That's the answer. You want to know what happened? That's it. That's a mu'uva she'yaf shalishchan." So that means that the chinuch, even the binyan which says that there is room for negative reinforcement, which might even say that there is room for even physical punishment, but at the same time, the parent always has to ask themselves, what's what I'm going to do now, how is that going to impact when they're 14 and 15 years old? That's what Rashi tells us, Ala Torah, putting together the issue of Chanukah Samizbeach with Chinuch itself. In Perek Yudal, Pasuk Yudal, in Parshas Lech Lecha, Vayorek es Chanichav Yildei Veiso, Avraham Avinu brings Eliezer, Eschanichov, Rashi writes, Chanichoksiv, it's written Beloshen Yachid, Zeliezer, Shechan Chola Mitzvahs. So I want to be most of one point to Rashi and then to say out what everybody says over from this Rashi. Eliezer is still called the Chanich of Avraham Avinu. Eliezer is quite a grown man at this stage, yet he's still someone who's Mechunach by Avraham Avinu. In other words, when Avraham Avinu was being Mechanech him, he was being Mechanech him already for this age, for much later on. And for those of us who merited to have special influences in our own growth, we can still consider ourselves students and children of those people who were mashpi on them. V'hu lashon haschalas knisas ha'adam okli l'umnas. Shehu asid la'modba. Chanukas HaMishkan, Chanukas HaMizbeach is inaugurating the Kli or the individual, as we'll see in a moment in Rashi, to their destiny of service. That's the whole process of Chinuch. Chinuch is not about the here and now. Chinuch is not a way of solving the situation that's in front of us. Chinuch is a way in which we form the entire destiny of the child. And that, Rashi says, is also the meaning of the Pasuk in Mishnah, Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. So, Vehu, again, Vehu Lashon Haschalas Knisas HaAdam. That's what Rav Volbi was saying over here. That when we talk about Chinuch, we're not talking about the Chinuch entirely of a 2, 3, 4, 5 year old. We're talking about something that's going to impact for them for their entire life. You know, they say over a famous mashal, which we've mentioned in the past, that there was a king whose advisors had said that they can train. There's an old controversy which even continued into the 20th century, the role of nurture and nature. So there was some advisors of the king who claimed that they could train cats to behave just like waiters. And of course, the Rabbanim at the time disagreed, and they say this about some say that it referred to another person. This story took place another person, but many say it's with the Abarbanel, that the Abarbanel came to the feast, that the cats were the waiters, and as they set up this beautiful, beautiful banquet, so the Abarbanel took out a little mouse and he dropped it, and all of a sudden the cats returned to being cats and no longer waiters. Binyan in the short term is training. That's what we're doing. We're training them to act with negative reinforcement, positive reinforcement. In fact, our boss said, we're going to do is we're going to spend a lot of time. Everybody, what's on everybody's mind is how do we punish? How do we reward? We'll get there. We'll get there. But in the beginning, when we're talking about chinuch, that's not at all chinuch. That's kemat not chinuch at all. It's a small nekuda of binyan. It's a small knesh. But the most important part of chinuch is realizing that it's not training, but it's preparing. It's preparing. It's being mechanech. Chanukas HaMizbeach is inaugurating it for its entire tafkid of kedusha. So too, it's inaugurating the child for a life of kedusha. Now, once we have this hagdara, there's also something else that's very, very important. If we're talking about preparing a child for life and not training a child for life, there's an excellent book. It's actually written, I was unaware when I picked it up, it's written by a religious woman. The cover looks very, very multicultural. It has a lot of different nationalities on the cover. The name of the book is Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. It happens to be that the therapist that wrote it is a religious woman. Her name is Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. That's the only giveaway. We're talking about someone. And it's actually quite a good book. I recommend it. And one of the points that she makes is very interesting. There's nothing religious about it at all, but you could see the influences of Torah in it. From what I understand, she's a well-known parenting expert. So she makes a point which I think follows from what Rabbi Volbi had taught us. And her first yesod that she calls a parenting philosophy, that's kemat the introduction, is to correct the following misconception. She has a list of 20 things what you can do in parenting and a list of 20 things of what you can't do in parenting. And she, let me just take a couple of them, of the cans and the cans, and then show you that I think that this is the yesod that really comes out if we realize that we're not training, but what we're doing is preparing, which is the definition of chinuch. What you can do, you can react gently and patiently to their mistakes. You can teach them a spiritual discipline. You can model behaviors. You can provide them with opportunities. What you can't do in parenting, you can't ensure that your children will be happy. You can't ensure that your children will have a desirable career. You can't ensure that your children will hold all of your beliefs and values. By the way, reading these words, they're very, very hard for me. These aren't easy words to say. But at the same time, it's very, very important to internalize them. You can't ensure that your child will enjoy the things you enjoy. What's the yesod? The yesod, again, is that we're not training. We can't train. What we could do is we could inspire. What we could do is create those positive things of Zriya that ultimately will lead the children to be most successful and most happy in their relationship with us. And if they look up to us and respect us and we are consistent in body values of Torah, then the odds are that they also will continue in that derech of Kedusha. So that's a very, very important next step of internalizing this idea. That if we're going for the long term through the process of Zriya and Binyan, what we're doing is trying to create a relationship where they're going to feel most comfortable with us, look up to us. And then once that happens, and once we do that in that warm way, so then Be'ezer Hashem, we have a much higher likelihood of being successful. Okay, so Rabosai, let's start. Just tonight we'll start on probably the most basic yesod, and how do we go about this process of Zriya. Let's start with, since Zriya is the more important of the two. I like Be'ezer Hashem to continue with Revoldi's metaphor about planting and focus on one thing, and that is the sun. For a tree to grow, it needs proper soil, which we're going to have to discuss. It needs water, which we're going to have to discuss. It sometimes needs shade, and it also needs sun. And the sun is Ahava. The most important condition, no tree can grow without sun, and no child can grow without love. Now when we say love, love does not mean, when I say love now, I do not mean that the parents love the child so deeply that they would give their life for them. I do not mean that the parents do everything they can for their child. I'm talking about something much more specific. I'm talking about an unconditional love that the children feel. Again, an emphasis on the ratio and the seifa. An unconditional love that the children feel. If it's I live in Beit Shemesh, where the sun, Baruch Hashem, doesn't stop shining as long we just continue down, that there should be a little bit of rain. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us a little bit, and then more. Where the sun doesn't stop shining. But at the end of the day, if there's something that's covering the plant, that the plant doesn't receive that sunlight, the parents could constantly be giving that love, but if there is something that's covering, that's blocking, that the child is not receiving it. Yes, in the child's perception, that the child is not receiving all the love that the parent gives, even if the parent is full and is even projecting all that love, but there's some equal, then God forbid, the child could be missing that most important ingredient. Let's talk about that seifa, that the child perceives that love. I hope my brother and sister-in-law are okay. I'll share with you a small Shalom Bayis issue that my brother had with his wife. In my parents' home, which my brother and I both agree was a very loving and positive home, we never heard the words, "I love you." Our parents never used those words. But my brother and I feel, Ad Hayom Hazeh, that we felt a tremendous amount of love. And my sister-in-law noticed that my brother would never say to my nephews and nieces, "I love you." And she felt that it was a big mistake. And my brother said, "But I felt love at home. My parents didn't have to use those words. It's so superficial, those three words. I love you, those are superficial words." But the Maisa, I think, because of Safek Doraisa v'chumra, even though in a way my brother has a point, there's so many more significant ways for a parent to express love than simply utter those words, and there are parents who utter those words, "I love you," and are, God forbid, abusive and so on, we have to always be concerned that as much love that we project to our children, to make sure that they hear that we love them. Of course, the parent that says, "I love you," and then abuse the children, that's Yatzaschara Be'seda. But at the same time, there are times that parents project love, but the child doesn't necessarily hear it. Let me give you some examples in another very, very good book. Rabbi Zachariah Greenwald, the ideas in this book are very nice, preparing your children for success, emphasizes something on page 14. We must remember that it is not enough to assume that because we are good to them, children know we care. And Rabbi said there are many parents that struggle from this. We can work until midnight to put the food that they like on the table and deny ourselves things so we can buy something special for them, but they do not necessarily know that we are even doing it at all. And that is something that's extremely, extremely important. We might have that tremendous love, we might be projecting that love, but the question we now have to ask ourselves, are our children internalizing that love? Now, how do we know if our children are internalizing that love? Well, we don't always. If the children generally are happy, then that's a good siman. But another way of doing it is making sure that it's clear, it comes out clearly both in our actions, and in our words. And that means that my sister-in-law is right, that the words today, I love you, are something that should be uttered. In more practical terms, the words I love you by itself can be very hollow. Sometimes I take my children to the pizza shop, and they'll ask me, why are we going to pizza? They're excited to go to pizza. Because often they go, they got a good report card, or they help clean up the house. Sometimes when we do something special, we could say, we're doing something special with you because I love you. To give them a hug and a kiss, sometimes you give them a hug and a kiss because they did something fantastic. They said something that was really kind to someone else. They shared with someone else. Then there are times that we kiss them, not because they did something good, but we kiss them because simply because we love them. And we tell them that we're kissing them because we love them. They have to be aware. They have to be aware that that they're receiving the love, and that the love is unconditional. You remember what Revolbi said earlier? Revolbi had said that sometimes a child could be abused by their parents. How? Not from hitting them, God forbid. Why? Darshin mimenu. The parents are constantly demanding from them. You could have a parent that gave a lot of love to the child, but all that love was conditional love. All that love was conditional. The ava has to be an ava which is not conditional, which is unconditional, and we have to make sure that they've internalized it. They say, one of Rav Moshe's sons, I believe it was Rav Reuven Feinstein, said something that was absolutely, if you think about it, just in the context of Rav Moshe's home. First of all, they say that Rav Moshe used to wake up very early in the morning, and that's when Rav Moshe had his time to learn uninterrupted. Let's paint the scene. Rav Moshe's Lower East Side apartment. It's a cold winter morning. Rav Moshe wakes up at about 3, 4 o'clock, and he learns. The children must be aware that their father is something that's unique in Klal Yisrael, so constantly people calling him, constantly his attention is constantly taken by Tzarfei Klal Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein wakes up in the morning, and every morning in the winter, when Reuven Feinstein wakes up, Rav Moshe has put his socks on the heater so that he has warm socks when he gets dressed in the morning. Among other things, says Reuven, in the winter he would always put my socks on the radiator so when I woke up in the morning they would be warm. They asked, Reuven Feinstein said this when they asked him how he felt love from Rav Moshe. Another thing, and this is extremely important as well, in painting a picture of Rav Moshe's house, even when we had guests at the table, my father wanted me to sit next to him. So here are two fantastic, fantastic examples of where the child knows that the father, as busy and as important as he is, the father has really, really thought about him. Even when he's getting up to learn to become a Baki B'Shatz, he's still thinking about his father's socks, number one. And notice something else, number two. Not only when he's sleeping, not only when his father is in his solitude with his Gemara, but also when they're sitting by the table, when Menachem Begin is visiting, when all the Gedolei Torah are visiting, whenever they're around, he has his children sitting close to him. That says to the child that you are always something that's very, very important to me. I was really happy, and at the same time it was very tragic, to see that Rabbi Greenwald mentioned something that I had told you in the past in one of the Parsha Shiurim. And he says, and I have the same experience, his Lashon is that when he meets a Talmud, he'll often put his arm around the Talmud. That's controversial today, but that's what he says. He'll put his arm around the Talmud, a teenager, and he says, in a moment of time, he'll be able to tell very, very quickly whether the young man has a good relationship with his parents or not. I don't have Ruach HaKodesh, he writes, but when you come up to a 14-year-old, put your arm around his shoulders and give him a warm hello, and he gets all fidgety and nervous, you can know that he's not used to being hugged by people who care about him. And he says over and over again, when that happens, he'll ask the parents, have they given their children hugs and physical love? And the odds are not. I mentioned to you in Parashas here, I think that I could pick out most of the time, I not only don't have Ruach HaKodesh, I don't even think I have a great, unique chinuch sense, but if you've been in chinuch for a while, you could see it from a mile away, that when there is a Talmud who didn't receive the warmth from their parents when they're young, as well as adolescents. In general, we're going to get to, Rav Volbi is not into high school dormitories at all. One of the reasons is, even an adolescent still needs that physical warmth and affection from the parents. And that's all part of the unconditional love. So, and I don't even think you need to do what Rabbi Greenwald says, to even put their arm around, just simply to talk and to interact with the Talmud. Most times one will be able to see that particularly the sense of warmth that the child felt when he was younger. By the way, sometimes what happens is that parents, when the children get older, when they're teenagers, they realize that they didn't do it, and then they begin to try to exhibit physical affection for the children. And then the children are often uncomfortable. So I want to be mechazik you now. Now's the time when the children, when they're younger, to show them that physical affection. Then you'll be able to continue doing it when they're adolescents. But if one doesn't do it now, then the odds are that one will not be able to do it later on. Okay. So these are, again, very, very important examples of unconditional love. And that is that there has to be an unconditional love of the son that the child receives, that they actually internalize it, they're actually receiving it, and it's not something that we're just projecting. Halacha l'maisa, that means that so many times we think that we're giving and we're projecting to our children, but if they haven't internalized it as love, they'll never know it. Sometimes my wife and I will feel that the children are kafui tov, that we've done something for the children, and they don't even internalize it. And then I ask myself, did they ever even have the opportunity to internalize what they were doing, what they were receiving? For example, a mother works so hard in preparing a Shabbos meal. Works so hard preparing a Shabbos meal. The children don't show any understanding of it because they didn't internalize what was going on around them. They don't even think about what it takes to prepare Shabbos. So the first thing, what are we supposed to do? Is that we're supposed to, as husbands, supposed to thank our wives. Wait a second. Oh, wow, the child realizes now that there's something that went in from the side of their mother. And sometimes parents have to realize that everything that they do to provide for their children, if there isn't something that's more concrete, something that's more unconditional, something that's closer to them, that's warmer to them, then it could very well be that all the love that the parent is projecting, the child doesn't internalize. That's Yisod Aleph. Yisod Beis is even more practical. And that's the Yisod that Radcliffe calls, it's all in the ratio. It happens to be that this Yisod I've heard in the name of Rav Volbi as well. It's all in the ratio. And in many ways, it's the most famous klal, I think, that is said over today in Chinuch. And the klal is known as the 4-to-1, or the 80-to-20 rule. The 80-to-20 rule, the 4-to-1 rule, is that for every, I want to formulate this very, very precisely, for every parent interaction with a child, there have to be four pleasant ones to one unpleasant one. That's the Yesod. And Kulei Alma Moda, from the Batei Midrashim in Geula to the therapist's office in Canada, this has become a given. I haven't heard anybody disagree with this Yesod, and I've heard it from many, many different sources. And that is, by the way, it's a little bit suspect that someone's been informing somebody else. But it's the same Yesod, and that is that there's a 4-to-1 ratio of complement, and not complement, that's why I was magdir it slightly differently before. Pleasant interactions versus unpleasant interactions. So let's give a couple examples of what constitutes unpleasant interactions. No, Josh, you can't eat until we finish this work. That's an unpleasant interaction. I know you don't like fish, but that's what we're having tonight. Those aren't necessarily bad interactions. David, please put your jacket into the closet where it belongs. Josh, stop teasing the cat right now. Now, one could argue that it depends on how the tone of voice, how the parent says or what type of tone of voice it is, or whether the parent says please or not. You could argue that, Rabosai, but I don't think it's correct. For sure, if it's screaming, so then that's a whole separate category. That's abuse. That might fall into the category of emotional abuse. But just because a parent, instead of saying, Josh, stop teasing the cat right now, even if the parent says, Josh, please stop teasing the cat right now, at the end of the day, it qualifies as an unpleasant parent-child interaction. Is it necessary? Absolutely. But at the same time, the parent then has to work that there's four positive ones versus the negative ones. What are then positive interactions? I saw that you started teasing the cat and you stopped. It was really, really hard. That's great. I know that you didn't finish supper last night, and tonight you did. That's fantastic. You don't even need the ratio sometimes. Something entirely positive. The way you treated your sister today was absolutely fantastic. Those are all examples of positive. Yes, sir.
If you're in the midst of like a bad spell, kids, you know, misbehaving or something at the table or whatever, you feel like you told them like 5 times to stop doing something. Is that the time to be like interspersed, like, oh, well, I have to say four pleasant things?
I think so. The yisod that some give is the following. Here's the mashal. They give very, it's so cute that we have to turn ourselves into 7-year-olds in this regard, but it's kedai. And that is, you take 8 pennies and 2 quarters. You put them in one pocket. For every positive compliment, you take, go from the left pocket, take a penny, and you put it in the right pocket. So that means that if you've already dished out the 2 quarters, so it means you got to get rid of 8 pennies. And it doesn't matter what's going on, according to this Yesod, I can't say I always live up to it, but I try. We try. Whatever. And we look for things. We look for things. We try to focus on the positive, on those positive things. Everybody might ask, but is that a little bit distorted? I understand that, you know, if you, Rebbe, want to emphasize that it's important that parents give compliments, fine. But 80-20, that sounds like a lot. So first of all, if that's our gut reaction, which I have to admit was partly mine when I first heard it, then first of all, we have to make a cheshbon nefesh and say, so wait a second, maybe then what we're doing is not entirely right. But just to bring out the importance of it and emphasize why it's so, so critical, think of some time that we had a very nice evening. We were sitting at a chasana, we were sitting with friends that we hadn't seen for a long time, and we had a beautiful conversation, a nice conversation, and then someone said something that was very hurtful. Of all the compliments that we received that night, we tend to focus on the negative thing. Children are no different. Children are so sensitive to everything that their parents say. And we don't see it, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not there. And that means that a couple of negative comments, or even one negative comment, could drown out many more positive ones. And that's why the Yesod is 4-1. That's why the Yesod is 4-1. Rabbi Greenwald says very, very tragically that when he speaks to kids who have been characterized as troubled teenagers, the theme that comes out over and over again is that most children will remember the anger, the slap in anger that their parents gave them, as opposed to all the warmth that they received as younger children. So that's the yesod that we need to start with working on. And that is the hamimut, is that the warmth. The warmth of that shemesh. And the warmth of the shemesh has two things for tonight. One is the unconditional love. The unconditional love to make sure that the child is perceiving, that's number one. And number two is the 4-1 rule. Be'ezer Hashem, next time what we'll do is we'll continue with a few more examples of this, and then we'll go on to the next part. Eventually we'll get to positive and negative reinforcement, but I want to stay on more of the yesodos before we get to those details. Everyone's